can survive if I let you.
Conquering nevermore.
Let the new era begin. The era of the ECW.
Oh my god.
Greetings, ECW fans, and welcome to This Is Extreme, the ECW History Podcast. I am your host, Dave Dynasty. Welcome back. Hopefully you continue to miss us and are still excited that This Is Extreme is back. As I've said before, we are now going to be a monthly podcast that may alter in the future, but for now, it will be once a month, and I hope to settle in on a set day each month in the near future, so stay tuned for that. For a few episodes, I will be re-releasing interviews that I did for my other podcast, Wrestling Nostalgia. Now, eventually, there will be new podcast materials and interview exclusively for This Is Extreme in the future. Be sure to follow the show on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and X. Just look for The ECW Pod or This Is Extreme, and you will find us. And also be sure to subscribe to me on YouTube at youtube.com/TheDaveDynasty. All right, this episode, my guest is the Blue Meanie. We talk about the BWO, Philadelphia, and so much more. So let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll have my interview with the Blue Meanie.
Support This Is Extreme and buy the This Is Extreme shirt. Show the world that you are part of the revolution and that you support our podcast and the history of ECW. Go to tinyurl.com/ECW pod shirt and buy yours today.
This is Wrestling Nostalgia, the podcast that dives into wrestling history. Hey, wrestling fans, I'm Dave Dynasty. And if you enjoy podcasts that are knowledgeable and history-driven, then Wrestling Nostalgia is for you. With great guests and fun interviews, there are over 200 episodes in our archives. We chat with several first-time guests and often cover topics not discussed on other podcasts. Look up Wrestling Nostalgia on your favorite podcast platform and visit all of our links at linktree.com/WrasslePod. That is linktr.ee/RASSLEPOD. And remember, wherever you go, whatever you do, be good, be safe, and keep on growing.
At this time, I'm being joined by former ECW and WWE star and host of the Mind of the Meanie podcast, the Blue Meanie. How are you, sir?
Hey, how you doing, my friend? I'm glad we could finally hook up.
I know. Yeah.
You had sent me a bunch of messages I never got. And then, like, we have a mutual friend I ran into. Yeah. Squared Circle.
Yeah.
Here we are.
I knew it'd work out somehow, some way. But let's talk about a few things. And I'll try not to ask you the same old typical career questions that everybody. I mean, we'll dabble in them a little bit, obviously, but all that stuff's out there. If people want to hear that, let's start off. Everybody knows, right? Blue Meanie, born, raised, still live in Philly.
Yes, sir.
Avid Philly sports fan.
Absolutely.
Now try to explain to those of us who don't know on the outside, what is different about a Philly sports fan?
It's just, I mean, I guess you could say we're the smart marks of the sports world, you know, just, you know, all those fans that you saw at the ECW arena, they were the descendants of the people who booed Santa Claus and all that stuff. But for all the gruff that Philly sports fans get, you know, we are a blue collar town. And going back to the days of the 60s and 70s, you know, 50s, people working in refineries and factories, you know, they want to come home. They just want to be entertained. You know, they go to work and bust their knuckles, you know, and, you know, take their work in their lunch pail, and they come home and they just want to be entertained. And they just want, you know, a return on their time. Time is their investment, and they want
right
an return on their investment. And we keep receipts. So we're just a passionate fan base who wants to be happily distracted. Whether you win or lose, just please show some effort. You know, even if you lose, if you showed that you fought, you know, we'll love you forever. I mean, the most beloved team in Philadelphia history is the 1993 Phillies, who lost the World Series. But the fact that they had so much character and grit, and they look like they could be at the bar with any one of the Philadelphia fans, they endeared themselves to us. So Philly, will love you forever as long as you show some effort,
Yeah, man, I love that 93 Phillies team. I was always a huge John Kruk fan. Love Lenny Dykstra and all those guys, man. It's Darren Dahl. I love that. I'm a Cardinals fan, but I appreciate, that's what I like those hustle teams, that play hard. And that team, man, they left it all on the field. And
what you would call it, I mean, we're so fortunate, Philly fans have been fortunate to have great announcers, and John Kruk does the play-by-play for the TV portion now. And he'll say something right out of left field. And he's entertaining when my wife's laughing along. Because she's a tough cookie too. She doesn't impress easy, but we'll be watching something. He'll say, he's a big wrestling fan too. There'll be a game of friends like, oh, after this, I'm going to go home and watch SmackDown. And
it's like, out of nowhere.
Love him. I love him.
Well, that grit, that passion, that's part of why ECW worked in Philadelphia, right? It could have only worked in Philadelphia.
Yeah, if I implore you, if you have HBO Max, or go on YouTube and look up the documentary, The Broad Street Bullies. HBO did a documentary on The Broad Street Bullies. It perfectly encapsulates the city of Philadelphia and like how hardworking a city this is. And like I said before, all we want is just to be entertained. And, like I said, those descendants of the fans who cheered for the Broad Street Bullies were going to ECW arena shows, they want to return on their investment. They could be anywhere on that Friday or Saturday, but they chose to come to the ECW arena. And I've seen people get booed out of that building. They've compared to something else. You ever see Showtime at the Apollo, people go out on stage and they know within like 10 seconds, 15 seconds, if you're good or not.
Yeah.
They're either going to cheer you or they're going to boo you. And the ECW fans were just hardcore fans before hardcore meant blood and all that stuff. Hardcore fans meant you would spend your last dollar to buy a ticket. You would go without food for a day, just as long as you could buy that ticket to that show. That's what hardcore fans meant, but got associated with, barbed wire and tables and chairs, which is a whole nother situation. But that was the ECW fan. And the thing is, I was the ECW fan in the crowd before I went to ECW. Yeah. I was going to shows as a fan, and that was kind of my cheat code. Once I got into wrestling and I got into ECW, I kind of had a cheat code of, I knew what the fans liked because I was one of them,
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to bring that up, right? There's all kinds of shots from shows where you could see, media in the crowd. So you were there. And speaking of that crowd, there was a, it's kind of one of the first cases where the crowd is part of the show, right? The crowd is a character of its own, but within that there are characters, right? There are the regulars that attended. Did you, I don't want to, hurt anybody's feelings or anything else, but did you have a favorite of the ECW fan personalities?
Oh man, just the fan base as a whole. They had Hat Guy. There was a Faith No More guy. Who's the guy who came down from New York? There was Bob and Sarge, Bob McGee, John McGee. John McGee looked like Sergeant Slaughter, there's Mark from, there was a guy who kind of disappeared, but he was Mark from Cherry Hill. He'd be ringside taking, photographs and stuff like that. Just characters, man. There was something special about going to those early ECW shows. You walk into the building, you smell the popcorn because they had the concession stands, and you're waiting for the show. You hear the rumble of the muffled conversation of people talking, and then Bob Ortiz would come out. And this is like the early days before they started really selling tickets. And they're like, Bob Ortiz would get on the mic and go, "All right, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to be on TV, I'll fill the bleachers." And people who are like underneath the camera, they would implore them to get on the other side so the crowd would look more full.
Yeah.
But as time went on, the word started to spread, and And they start selling tickets. But that crowd as a whole, I always compare DCW crowd to the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah.
People know the songs, they know the dances. They're dancing in the aisles as the movie's playing and stuff like that. But it was just a breed onto its own where there were. I always said the ECW locker room was like the land of misfit toys, but the crowd was just a bunch of misfits in their own way. And I mean that in the most lovingly way.
Yeah.
They're, but it was a magical time.
Yeah.
And you know,
And
it, I'm sorry, go ahead.
no, I was gonna say, you mentioned the hardcore thing, and that's something that's always frustrating me too, because I feel like people who just lump in ECW with the death match and all that stuff, I don't think they truly watched ECW, or at least not enough. Because ECW, well, that yeah, was there blood and web? Yeah, sure. But it was such a mix, right? You also had some of the greatest technical wrestling I've seen on those shows. You know, the high flight, there was just something for everybody on those shows. And anybody who just labels it blood and guts, I don't think they were really paying attention.
Well, I mean, we borrowed. I mean, ECW did a lot of revolutionary things, but we borrowed from other people. No,
Yeah.
ECW borrowed from Memphis, you know, where you know the home of the concession stand brawl. Then, you know, we start working with. Well, I wasn't with the company at the time, but ECW started working with FMW, and they were
Yeah.
bringing guys over from FMW and doing some of that crazy stuff. And yeah, ECW does definitely does gets maligned with deathmatch stuff, but the guys who were doing the hardcore stuff, the tables, chairs, and stuff like that, they knew how to work it. You
Yeah,
know,
right.
they, you know, you take a Tracy Smothers, you take a Tommy Rich, or you know, guys who've been around, you know, and working with the, you know, Terry Funk, you know, and you get that mixed in with the younger audience. Everybody thought we were legit, like shooting on each other, but we were working it, you know,
Yeah.
and you know, we're trying to. How do you stand out when, you know, the two biggest companies are WWF and WCW? You gotta do something different, you know, to draw them in, which is why I truly believe if ECW would have stuck around, it would have became more of like a Ring of Honor. I think if it would have evolved into something totally different. But
Sure. Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
we you know, if you're gonna, you know, if you don't have the budget for, you know, the pyro and the lighting and the music and all that stuff, you have to do something to stand out. And that's, you know, where we, you know, stood our ground, you know,
Yeah.
on the hard hitting action. And you see the stuff that's done now, it's like, man, we were working it. You know, I'll say stuff and people are like, well, you were at ECW. I was like, well, that's how I got my opinion.
Yeah,
That's
definitely.
how I said, you know, yeah, maybe. You know, New Jack really wasn't stapling people. He would put a piece of bubble gum on a bag of a dollar, put it in your forehead, hit the clicker, and you know, you'd sell like you got stapled. You weren't really getting stapled, you know, but
Yeah.
brother, brother.
And I don't want to rehash everything here, but I do want to start
Of
talk a little
course.
about the formation of the Blue Meanie character, right? Because I've always been fascinated, and maybe you've told the story, and I apologize if you have, but obviously you were trained by Al Snow, working around the Midwest, the Northeast, and you say you got noticed by Raven on a Pittsburgh show. Is that correct?
It was
So
a.
how did he approach you? How did that connection at that show happen?
Oh, we did a series of three shows. There's one in Baltimore, West Virginia, and Pittsburgh was the finale where I wrestled a guy who was doing the Batman gimmick. And Raven was wrestling a guy I went to Al Snow school with, a guy named Ray the Crippler Roberts, who was another character in his own right. And I was like, oh, I gotta watch this match. So I watched the match. You know, I had already wrestled. I watched the match. You know, the match is over. Raven comes to the back. I go, hey, I really enjoyed the match. He goes, hey, nice moonsault. I went, oh, you watched my match? So that night, you know, we all, you know, crashed at the promoter's house, you know, hanging out, drinking beers, you know, sleeping on the couch or the floor. And next day we went out for lunch, you know, at a little Chinese restaurant around the corner. That's where he approached me for the character, just to be Stevie's lackey. And I was like, sure, I mean, yeah. He's like, I was like, I'm gonna be in ECW, right? He's like, yeah. He's like, you're gonna have to wear a half shirt and Daisy Duke. So I was like, but I'll be in ECW, right? He was like, yeah. I was like, I'm in. I'm in. So I debuted October 94. No, October 95. That footage got grabbed because that was the night of the fire incident with Terry Funk and Cactus Jack. So between the October show and November show, we go back out to Pittsburgh for the same promoter, Norm Connors, who I owe a lot of my career to. And driving home, it was me and Stevie in a tag match, working on our chemistry. And driving home, we're driving through a blizzard, and Raven came up, pitched the idea for the Blue Meanie character. I was like, he's like, do you ever see the Blue Meanie, do you ever see the Yellow Submarine? I was like, yeah, I was a kid, do you remember the Blue Meanies? Yeah. He's like, well, you're going to be the Blue Meanie, and you're going to love it. And you're going to want to paint your whole body blue, but just do your hair. And I'm like, Bobby and ECW, right? He's like, yeah, I'm in. You don't have to sell me. And, we went to his house, took a nap, woke up, went to Blockbuster, rented the Yellow Submarine, and he helped me do character study on it. And we're, he would have me stand in the middle of the living room, and he was sitting in a chair, and he said, Blue Meanie, do a promo on this. Blue Meanie, do a promo on that. And then character, I would have to do a promo.
Yeah.
And he pitched it to Paul, and I'd been coming around to ECW shows with him, and so everybody's familiar with me, and we were off to the races. I debuted November to Remember 95 was my debut, which was very symbolic because Stevie brought me over to Guardrail, which I had been a fan in the crowd, so it's like, me go to a Phillies game, and they're like, hey, you want to take a couple of bats? Sure, why not?
Yeah. So it's fascinating because I know from hearing you talk, right? You're more of a metal hard rock guy, right? Van Halen fan, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some days it's Van Halen, some days it's Slayer, some days it's Britney Spears. Who knows?
Okay. So were you a Beatles fan at all?
Very loose. I mean, I liked them. I don't think I had any Beatles records, but I didn't hate them.
You were so happy that you were going to get this role in ECW that you could care less that this odd Blue Meanies thing from a cartoon from 30 years ago. You're like, whatever, let's do it.
It's like when they gave Dusty the polka dots.
Make it work.
He's like, I'm going to make this work. Steve Austin, he didn't want to be the ringmaster, but it was a foot in the door.
Yep.
And it evolved into Stone Cold Steve Austin. Not that I'm putting myself in the shoes of Dusty Rhodes or Steve Austin, but I've seen people cut their career short or cut opportunities short just by going, oh, I can't do that. Why not? If you're not willing to do something, then when I coach younger wrestlers, younger guys will come up to me in the locker room. I always say, be the talent that's told to tone it down, not the one that they have to motivate to do anything, they give you something to do, go full bore, I mean, unless it's something that's really going to harm you, give it a shot,
Yeah.
If it's just a thing of a character, as long as it's not like doesn't go against your morals, it's just sure. Crazy, but just give it a shot. God knows what it could turn into,
Yeah. There's actually a recent quote from Chelsea Green. I'm kind of paraphrasing, but she says that very similar thing, right? That she's getting all this TV time because she was doing things that other wrestlers didn't want to do or turn it down. Oh. And these things that she was like, fine, I'll do it. Bring it to me. I don't care. I'll do it. It's going to get me on TV. And, and look how her role's expanded. And, you got to take what you can get, make it work for you and do your thing. So at what point do you know, and maybe it's not a specific point, what point in the process did you feel like the Blue Meanie was you and it was now yours and not just this Beatles derivative thing? Was there a point where you felt like it kind of flipped for you a little bit?
I didn't notice it when it happened, probably when we started doing the parodies. I grew up a big fan of comedy, whether movies or stand-up comedy. And I brought a lot of that into my character. And I was always the class clown in school. A lot of my friends compared me to Chris Farley in high school, for the love of God, that kind of stuff, And that's why I just brought to the character, you know, just you know, people go, oh, pro wrestlers are a bunch of actors. We're not actors, we're reactors.
Yeah.
You know, I was just, you know, let my improvisational side take over, you know. But you know, there's a point where, you know, maybe we're doing the parodies where I was like, oh, I can bring my comedic stylings into this and make it work. Where, you know, I did, I would be the fun loving meanie coming to the ring, you know, dancing, all that stuff. But once the heel did something dastardly, I became serious, you know. So, you know, that's, you know, I learned a lot watching, you know, the Public Enemy. They would do the dancing and stuff like that, but once, you know, they got in the ring, there was a switch that flipped and they became serious. So yeah, it, probably right around when we started doing the parodies, you know, we're the we were the Fabulous Ones at first, and then we became the Blue Meanie Bloods, which was, you know, Bobby Eaton and Steve Regal, and Colonel Demini and the Baron Von Stevie. It's just goofy stuff, but you know, and you know, a lot of people would have turned that down because I want to be a serious pro wrestler. It's like, it's a foot in the door. It's a foot in the door. You know.
And the parodies are another example of that opportunity, right? Because you're doing these, people may not remember, the BWO was just one of those parodies at first.
Yeah.
Just another one. And then, but it, why did it click? Why do you think it clicked with fans so much? And how did you know? And how did you react when you saw, oh, they're latching onto this one?
Yeah, the BWO is supposed to be a one night thing, and I think the fact that we're taking, you know, having a poke at the big two companies with the parodies. But I mean, you know, I'd done Blue Dust, which, you know, everything we did was with respect, but in the eyes of the fans, we're, you know, we're punching up. So we're punching up.
Sure.
And you know, the BWO is supposed to be a one night deal. And when once he got through the back, you know, Todd Gordon was like, I think we got something there. And we started doing it around the loop and get pretty started printing up t-shirts and became one of the hottest selling t-shirts in ECW history.
Yes.
They were selling hundreds of those shirts a night. And it's like, my God, you know, it became a focal point for Stevie to get his run at the ECW world title. Now we broke off from Raven, you know, became our own entity, and you know, semi-main, we're co-main event at the first ever ECW pay-per-view. So it just,
And it's crazy, right? Because since then, everybody has done the whatever X World Order since then. I mean, everybody's got that parody shirt now, but it was different then, right? It was unique,
I
and
wouldn't.
not only that, but it was in the moment, right? You were doing it while the NWO was on the other channel.
Yeah, there was, you know, moments where they would say something. There was a moment where the NWO took a shot at ECW on Monday Nitro, and the next weekend we came out. Oh, they said something about a bingo hall. So the next weekend we came out with bingo cards. You know, they were saying stuff about us, and we were, you know, ECW, and we were reacting in real time, you know, and they always took it as a compliment. You know, I you know, Kevin Nash and Scott Hall always took it, you know, even X-Pac and Hogan as well. 'Cause I talked to everybody about, I talked to all the NWO members about the BWO, and they all took it as a compliment. So, and that's what it was meant to be, you know, just, we were the Weird Al Yankovic of professional wrestling.
I mean, it's part of it, right? That's part of the sport. It's always happened, right? There's always been parodies.
Yeah.
Even you go as far back, it's always happened. And it's nothing new, and that's part of the business, part of working.
Think back in the day on was it NWA or WCW, you know, the Hollywood Blondes came out doing a flair for the old, you know, or Terry Funk coming out doing a parody of Ric Flair.
That's right.
They've been done, but we just happened to get noticed on a, you know, for doing it more consistently. Sorry for saying.
It's okay. And again, there's the whole WWE run. I'm not gonna go into a lot of that. It's out there again. People can, obviously a lot of why, but that's pretty the I guess I want to say overall. It is so remarkable that this kid from Philly going to these shows, doing the comedy stuff, it got you on WWE, national TV, right? I mean, how remarkable is that? I'm not undermining your abilities,
Oh,
just
no.
saying, right? People that want to brush that aside as, oh, it's just comedy crap. Okay, well, there you were, right? I mean,
I always say my WWF run was just one big rebate check. They just gave me back all the money I spent as a kid. But I was just fortunate, you know. Look, when I got into the wrestling business, I got boots and tights just like everybody else. And the Blue Meanie character was something that was given to me, and it happened to work. And you know, everybody's got to know that they have a place on the card. You know, my card, my spot was, you know, if something, you know, in ECW, somebody goes through a flaming table, and then the next thing to come out, you got to, you know, set the tone and take the vibe a different way. I came out, me, Stevie, and Nova, or just me and Nova, you know, after Stevie left, and we would set the tone and kind of bring the temperature down. So when the next crazy thing happened, you're not burning the crowd out, and that was fine, you know. And I think it actually gave me a little bit of longevity, you know. So I went to WWE. The only problem with my WWE run is maybe it was a couple of years too late. You know, my character was more for like late 80s, well, 80s and early 90s, right before the Attitude Era. You know, it was a little bit more of a colorful character, you know. So, and the thing that also kind of hurt me is I had to own my own trademark. So, you know, they like to own their own characters and stuff like that. But
That's right.
yeah, but now you know, they got guys using their shoot names, so who knows? But
Yeah.
you know, I have no regrets, man. I had a great run. I wasn't supposed to make it. You know, I grew up I grew up a severe asthmatic, and you know, I couldn't play any other kids' reindeer games, and here I am on the biggest stage in the world,
Yep.
going to WrestleMania in my hometown. I mean,
Sure.
if you wrote a story about it, it'd be like, ah, it's a little too corny. You know, it's a little bit too like
But
a two storybook, you
it
know, but there I was doing it.
Yeah. And after after departing WWE or they release you or whatever it is, you went back to ECW for a short run doing the Blue Boy thing, right?
I really don't talk about it. It was just a rough time in my life. My
Yeah. No, that's okay. Well, my only question is, right, you stayed there for a little bit and then you left. Then after that, though, you're doing your own thing and you're working other shows, promoting your shows. Do you remember when you heard that ECW was finished? Because you weren't there at the time, but do you remember hearing the news and what went through your mind as that being such an integral part of your career?
Well, we were doing show, and like it, I'm not really fond of the Blue Boy character because it reminds me of ECW closing down. It reminds me of the fact that WWE asked me to lose weight. I lost 160 pounds and they still let me go. So, and around that time, you know, I had lost my grandmother. So that whole, from like 2000, 2004, I'm like, you know, but you know, I'm good now. I'm good now. But hearing that ECW closed, I mean, I was doing shows, you know, maybe 2 weeks before it closed. You know, the last show was at the ECW Arena, and I mean, if they knew they were going to close, just have the last show at the ECW Arena, not Pine Bluff, Arkansas. No offense to Pine Bluff, Arkansas, but you know, I've reached out to say, "Hey, do you guys need me this weekend?" They're like, "Nah, it's a small show. They don't want to fly too many people," and that's why I had heard. And then, like, word started coming out that, you know, the boys knew that the found out that was the last show. And I just remember talking to some guy, you know, back in the day on AOL Instant Messenger, we're just like, really, that's it? Pine Bluff, Arkansas? Again, sorry, Pine Bluff, but man, it was nice. And then of course Paul shows up on Monday Night Raw, you know, and you know, the bummer was, you know, we could have finished it in Philly on a high note, and that show, I mean, the shows were still selling out. That's the hard thing. You know, you go to New York, you go to, you know, the theater there in New York, you know, and shows are selling out. So it's like you have all this, you know, these people in the crowd, you assume the show's making money, and for it to just, you know, go out like that was crazy. It was crazy. It's unbelievable. But you know, either, you know, sink or you swim and you survive, and you have to go into the next thing. But I feel bad for the, you know, it didn't really hurt me the way it hurt other people, because there's people who were owed a lot of stuff for a long time. When I went back to ECW, I was still technically getting paid by WWE because, you know, they gave me my release But they still pay you the remainder of the contract while you're being
Yeah.
released. As long as I didn't go to WCW, I was fine. You know, so they still kind of paid me. So I was getting something from ECW and WWE, but there's people who were going without checks for a while and losing houses, losing cars, and
Yeah.
it's brutal. But all it needed, ECW just needed one deal, and I'll say that, and I believe it. One company could have came in and said, "All right, you're on TV. Here's some money," and they would have survived, you know.
Definitely. Yeah. It is sad when you watch some of the documentaries that people have made and different things. When you see the particularly I think Balls Mahoney, right? With one of them, I don't remember which one it was, where he's at a show and people are asking him and he's like, "Oh, I hear though it's still we're gonna come back." You know, it's just Paulie's working the, and it's so sad. I mean,
That's the Barbed Wire City documentary.
yeah. It's just yeah, it's like you love that passion, that enthusiasm, but it's like balls. It's hard because what else, Balls, what was he going to do? That was his thing. And
It's just like I said, it needed one company, like Mike Johnson said, and Mike Johnson from PW Insider, was the closer.
ECW long timer, right? I mean,
Yeah, he was there through all the stages, and he
he
said
was one of those wacky crowd guys.
W just needed one company to come in and support it. When they got the
Yep.
TNN deal,
Yeah.
TNN wasn't covering any of the expenses. They wanted ECW to have production truck quality shows, but they wanted ECW to pay for it, and it just drained the accounts, and ECW was making money towards the end, but any money that they had made was still paying for the previous year. But like I said, you get one company, one TV channel to come in and say, "All right, we want you. Here's a signing bonus," and then it would have been off to the races,
Yep, definitely. What is it you think then about the nostalgia though that keeps ECW? Because it's remarkable that this company just had, honestly, there's a short run in the history of wrestling. Still the chance all the time. It's just such a remarkable thing that it's still alive in spirit.
It's. I always say it was the. I said. I always say ECW was the Halley's Comet of professional wrestling. It only a certain amount of people saw it for a short amount of time, but those people who saw it still talk about it to this day. And now with social media and YouTube and stuff like that, it's easy for a guy to show his kids. You know,
Sure.
and it's a bonding thing between a parent and a child. Oh, this is my wrestling, and then the kid falls in love with that wrestling, and then that kid gets a little bit older, and then he's showing his friends ECW. So I think with the, I mean, the ironic thing about it is if we had YouTube back in the day, ECW probably would have been
Sure.
okay. They could have monetized their shows on YouTube and all that stuff. But
Yeah.
nowadays with YouTube and the network and the documentaries, there's been three documentaries on ECW, all great,
Yep.
sister, brother,
Yeah.
you can watch them back to back to back, and they tell the same story but from different perspectives.
Sure. Yeah.
That's what keeps ECW alive. You don't see people chanting AWA, you don't see people chanting WCW. It's ECW, and it's just a symbol of hard work. That's what it was. Everybody needs to be busted their ass to
Yeah.
entertain the fans.
Yeah. I've always viewed you as one of those guys that were on the forefront of marketing yourself. I mean, 'cause you've done a little bit of everything, right? You've promoted shows, you've worked all over. I mean, you still are popping up on MLW, AEW, making appearances and things. And you still have shirts in the podcast and independent figures. And but you were kind of, there was a few of you guys that were really on that, to me, on the cusp of starting that. You owned your trademark, you said, of knowing that, hey, I'm a business, I'm a product, I can invest and promote me, and you could do that and have a career and continue on without a contract with one of the major companies. And now it's lots of guys are getting to do that. Thankfully, it's there are plenty of guys making careers off wrestlings, but I again, guys like you, Colt Cabana, some of you guys that were on the forefront to me of doing that. Was there a moment where you thought, this is where it's going, that maybe, I can do this, or is it just that I this is what I want to do? This was it a necessity, or are you kind of reading the trends, or a little both?
I'm just a big believer. If I don't promote myself, why? If I don't promote myself, why should anybody else?
Yeah, okay.
It's theater of the mind. Even if, like, say I'm having a bad day, I wake up on the wrong side of the bed, I'm miserable. You'll never know it because my job is to go out there and make people forget about their bad day. And if I could go, whether I could go to a show or a convention and try to make people happy, then I've done my job. And then through that, I can still, market myself, as this character. I always say I'm the Philly fanatic of professional wrestling. I'm like Barney, I'm kid friendly, but just you have to promote yourself. You have to sell yourself because if you don't, why should a company hire you?
Right.
And if you're willing to do your that for yourself, you'd be willing, certainly be willing to do it for any promotion that would hire you. So you'd be an asset to anybody who would want to hire you. So that's just, it's to me, it's just common sense. I
Yeah.
think I've always been fan friendly going back to the early days of like the internet and, AOL and being on the grandstand, message boards and, chats,
The
stuff like
memories.
that. Yeah. I mean, I just recently did I went to the residency AEW had here in Philly. And I've known Tony Khan for a while, and one night we're leaving, and one night I'm leaving the building, the show's over. I'm still customary. I say thank you and goodbye to people. I see Tony; he's talking to the Young Bucks. I'm like, sorry to interrupt. Thank you for the opportunity. And I shake everybody's hand. And Tony he looks at the Young Bucks and goes, "The Blue Meanies know me since I was 12 years old," and then they're like, "What?"
Yeah, that's context.
Yeah, but well, because of the, because of the early days of the internet and just being out there and put myself out there, promote myself, and just, it could be a simple something as simple as going to the bank and I have blue hair, be like, oh, I like your hair. Oh, it's for my job. What's your job? I'm a
Yeah.
professional wrestler. You're a professional wrestler. Where do you wrestle? ECW, we're right there at Swanson Arena. Hey, maybe I'll come out and buy a ticket.
There you go.
That just
Yeah. Well, I did want to ask you a little
you
bit.
are your own product, just like with this podcast.
Definitely.
Your product is
Yep.
your business,
Yeah.
and you represent not only yourself but the people around you.
Yeah.
It's a whole thing, but
Sure, it is. But yeah, and I get my whole point was I really felt that you were on the fore one of the guys in the forefront of that, and I think that's pretty remarkable. I do want to ask you just briefly. I know we're going to wind down here soon, but you have dabbled in acting. And
yes.
I've noticed as I look at some of your actors, there seems to be quite a few horror credits there, right? Are you a
Yeah.
horror, movie fan?
A little bit. I just
Okay.
happen to have a good friend named Len Kabasinski who did a bunch of movies. He's got a company called Killer Wolf Films. And he brought me in to do a movie called Swamp Zombies, late early
Yeah,
2000s. And it was fun. I mean, it reminds me of the movies you would watch on USA Up All Night, or or whatever kind of like,
The horror host kind of
yeah,
shows.
Son of Svengoolie, or
Yeah.
just fun, campy. You're not gonna win an Oscar, but if you can entertain people, like I said, entertain the people, and that worked out so well that he brought me in to do a bunch of other movies with him, and up there in Erie, Pennsylvania, just had a blast. And I mean, I did maybe like three or four movies with them. And then it turned into me doing mo other movies. I have a friend, Tommy Avalone, who did a comedy called Community College. And he always had me appear in his movies somehow, whether it's with a part or just a cameo in the background somewhere. It's something fun to do. It hurts a lot less, and it's just like wrestling, just without the bumps.
Yeah.
But
Well, I always notice I'm an avid horror fan, so I always notice when a wrestler has some horror credits, and lots of wrestlers, it seems, do have horror credits. It's pretty funny that because horror is that got that independent spirit too, right? Where there's a lot of independent horror movies, so.
My favorite one I did with Len was Curse of the Wolf, which had Leap and Lanny Poffo in it.
Oh. That's
And we were
great.
just blown away by how good Lanny Poffo was.
Of course he
And we're
was.
watching it. I'm watching a movie. I'm like, Lanny's pretty freaking good. You know, it's if you get a chance to watch any of those movies, watch Curse of the Wolf. It was
I will. I
way
will.
back, and it was cool just to hang out with Lanny in
Sure.
a non-wrestling atmosphere where we didn't have to worry about, okay, what time's my match? Okay, let me go over my match. I'll see you in a second. You know, we can
Yeah.
just hang around and BS and, you know, talk, you know.
Yeah. Well, and one of the other things that's always resonated with me about you, and you mentioned it, right, is you're a fun guy. You always seem to be having fun. And you just said, right, sometimes you got to put, if you're having a bad day aside for that, that's got to be difficult. But especially though, when you're in a business where so many guys, they don't put that aside, right? If they're having a grumpy day,
Oh my God.
it's there. They're going to make sure everybody knows and they take it out. And
I watch in astonishment. You know, I'll be at a convention. I'm at my table. I call it, you know, what I call what I do running for mayor. You know, I'm just, hey, how you doing? Good to see you. How's your day? And somebody, you know, without, you know, just there'll be somebody at my table next to me going, oh, I don't even have enough money to get home. Can you buy an 8x10? I need gas money. And that's like, what are you doing, brother?
It's
What?
such a unique business. I mean, it's just you could speak for hours just on the uniqueness of wrestling. Well, as we wrap down, I do want to do one thing. Let me ask you just a handful real quick.
Sure.
Philly specific questions. This
Yeah.
is I'm not from Philly. I've not actually visited Philly. It's on the bucket list. But okay, best cheesesteak in Philly.
Oh my God, that's a dangerous question.
I will.
You could throw a rock and
How
hit.
about what's your favorite? Do you have a regular? I mean, because I'm assuming, right, every neighborhood's there's probably got their favorite, right? Got a local.
Like I said, it's a point of contention. People throw hands over their cheesesteaks. I recently just had the Skinny Joey's, which was good. An underrated sandwich in Philly nobody really talks about is the roast pork sandwich. And there's a place called John's Roast Pork, which is right down the street from the ESUB Arena. I'm 10 minutes from the arena, if that. You go to Snyder Ave, right down the street, John's Roast Pork. They have a really, really good cheesesteak. But
Okay.
and there's also another place called Angelo's, which is on 9th Street, which but they're actually moving into the same building complex as the 2300 Arena, ESUB Arena. So, I mean, and of course, back in the day, Tony Luke's, which is now Tony and Nick's because of, you know, legal stuff. But yeah, I mean, you got Jones Roof Pork, Skinny Joey's, Angelo's, Tony and Nick's, and if you go a little bit down the street, there's a place called Phillips that's pretty good. You know, a lot of good stuff. You know, and there's a feud between South Philly and Northeast Philly too. Oh my, we got the better cheese. Eh, whatever. But you know, like I said, you can throw a rock at South Philly and hit a good cheese. In Philly, we have two Home Depots, and they both had this place called Rocky's. Hot sausage or whatever, where they do, you know, hot sauce, but they also have a really good cheesesteak where they'll chop up sausage and mix it in with the cheesesteak. Total fatgasm. Yeah, just
All right, so speaking of cheesesteak, cheese whiz on a cheesesteak or no?
that's for tourists. If you want to get a proper Philly cheesesteak, get a cheesesteak with provolone. You could get mild. I prefer sharp provolone, but you know, the proper, a really good Philly cheesesteak, a cheesesteak with sharp provolone, broccoli rabe, fried onions.
I feel pretty. I live in Pensacola now, Florida,
Okay.
and we have a. It's called Philly's. It's a cheesesteak, but this guy's he's born and raised in Philly, and now he lives here, and so he's kind of the one here. But I've heard people say that's pretty good, but
Cheese Whiz is okay.
no, they don't do the cheese. They don't do cheese whiz.
Oh,
How's this?
okay.
No,
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 no.
no, no
But
cheese
yeah,
whiz.
no cheese. It's too
They're one
sweet.
of those. Yeah, they're one of those places. If you were to ask for cheese whiz or mayo or something, they would literally tell you to just, yeah, go somewhere else.
Yeah. Ketchup or,
No.
yeah.
Yeah.
You
All
can
right.
try
So
hot sauce too.
So what's your favorite Rocky movie?
I'd have to say Rocky IV, strictly for the soundtrack. You know, it's a great movie, but the soundtrack itself is fantastic. But yeah, I have to say Rocky IV. Least favorite's Rocky V. But then again, I've watched it maybe once or twice, and I was just like, eh. But maybe I think now if I went back and watched it with older eyes, I might appreciate it more. But favorite Rocky movie would have to be Rocky IV.
Yeah, I like four. I lean a little towards three just because I like the Clubber Lang, the Mr. T. I
Rocky
like.
Balboa is really good too, man.
Yeah.
A lot of good quotes came out of that, Hey, how hard you get hit, but get hit and keep moving forward. That's what
Yeah.
work is, you know? It's
Yeah, that's good stuff. Yeah. Your
amazing.
favorite Phillies player of all time.
Ooh, that, man, that 93 team was amazing.
It's almost like you have to take a whole team as a whole, right? How can you separate someone out from it?
I'll have to go with John Kruk. I'll have to go with John Kruk because I. Times and he's a big wrestling fan too. So, John Kruk. You're muted.
There you are. Okay.
There
Yeah,
you
what
go.
happened? Okay. All right. So, how about can the Eagles win the Super Bowl next season?
They seem to be a every other year team with under Nick Sirianni. So the first, year they got knocked out in the first round. Second year they went to the Super Bowl. Next year they got knocked out in the first round. Next year they won the Super Bowl. This year they got knocked out in the first round. So my goodness, why not?
Sure.
I'm excited to see what Sean Mannion does as an offensive coordinator. The team seems very excited to have him as an offensive coordinator. And when people are excited like that, it seems to be contagious. So I think they can win another Super Bowl under, Nick Sirianni.
This is Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. Hello, I am one of your friends, Dave. I am one of the co-hosts of Listen to Their Screams with my friend, Ike. And we want you to come and check us out. We are a fun-filled, positive horror movie podcast that does reviews, news, birthdays, anniversaries. We play games. We are a ton of fun every week for you, the horror fan out there. For all of our links to our social media and the podcast platforms, just check out our link tree. It is linktr.ee/listen2screams. That is listen, the number two, and screams. Or look us up on your favorite social media platform and podcast provider.
All right, and thank you to Meanie for doing the interview with me. Hopefully you enjoyed that. Once again, follow the show on Facebook, Instagram, and X under the ECW Pod. The next episode will be out in a month, so be sure to subscribe to us now so that you do not miss that. And if it's applicable, please give us a rating and a review. Tell all your friends about This Is Extreme. Tell them to join the revolution, as they say. And remember, until the next episode, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep it extreme.